start this episode. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
It's me and Patrick.
Just us.
Just us.
Only two.
Just us, so...
What is the loneliest number?
Well...
Except for the number two.
It's the loneliest number since the number one.
That's it. That's the one. That's the line I was trying to say.
We couldn't be joined by Robert. He had napping to do.
He had very important napping to do.
And then probably some homework, but I'm thinking more napping than anything. And then Reed, who knows? I'm with Reed. Reed doesn't really need to ever actually give an excuse.
That's true, because he's got, like, a family. He's got an honest to God family.
None of us really have to give an excuse, but...
Reed especially doesn't have to give an excuse.
Right, yes.
Because unless he doesn't, we always assume that it's like...
He's a father of four.
He's spending time with his family. Is it four? I thought it was just three. Or did
he just had the fourth one. Yeah. So, which is too bad, because congratulations, Reed. I brought the X-23 again.
Did you? To give us one?
No, I'm just going to leave it in my car, but if he shows up...
Let's see it.
Didn't I bring it? I think I've seen it.
I'll see it again. Afterwards.
Yeah. When the next time he ends up joining us, it will have been broken. My car will have been broken into and it's stolen or something. Something's going to happen where he's not going to end up with it. Because I've been trying for almost four months, to get him this thing and it's not happening.
Not happening.
So, I wanted to do something about this room, but it's just not going to happen. In other words, I wanted to put something on the walls.
What, like egg crates?
Yeah, egg crate. Or just, we could do blankets. If we all brought in, like, a blanket.
I don't think... See, I've listened to our podcasts here at Great Escape. I know I said I haven't, but I actually have.
Uh-huh.
And the echoing effect isn't, you know...
After a while, you don't...
Yeah, after a while, you don't really notice it.
Yeah, but it sounds a lot better when you have, you know...
When you're in open space, yeah.
Yeah, we probably should be mic'd up and all that stuff. You know, we've been doing this long enough that it wouldn't be crazy to take it seriously.
But, well, I mean, I've heard, like, a multitude of podcasts which are done just on the iPhone, and they always sound pretty good. Maybe they have the new iPhone headphones come with, like, a mic.
So they do.
Maybe, you know, you can, like, plug that in.
That's what I was thinking, that maybe we could kind of... join them together somehow, but I've been looking for stuff that will do that and I can't find anything. There's no little hub there you can plug in multiple headphone mics. Mm-hmm. That would be more or less perfect, because they'd be super affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And we could get that done pretty easy, but as far as I know, there's no such thing. There is microphones that you can plug directly into the thing,
of course,
that are like omnidirectional or whatever, but I don't know what the point of that is. I don't know if I listened to some reviews for them. There were a guy tried out like three different ones, and he made a video of it where he said, okay, this is without any mic, this is with this mic, this is with this mic, and you kind of hear the difference and all of them, and none of them sound so differently that I was like, I should get one of those.
The expense is warranted.
That's going to help. The biggest thing that'll help is getting out of this echoey ass room.
Mm.
And I'll be honest, the last one I'm editing, the last one at Empires, now I almost finished it last night, but I passed out before I could finish it.
Fair enough.
But, through the first 10 minutes, there's talking that isn't us.
Really?
And it's pretty audible. Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
And that just kind of dawned on me that I don't remember that being an issue before, and I don't know if that was Ron's mic.
I think it was because of Ron's mic, to be honest.
It must be it, because... But see, at the same time, though, even with those episodes with that mic, you still heard, like, the door...
Back the door opening.
The door chime. But I don't know. Who knows what it is? I'm not about to go in there and tell Ben to pipe down.
No, I'm not either.
So... Who knows? Maybe we'll figure something out.
Is the talking, like, really terrible? Because it's only, like, 10 minutes, and does it overpower our conversation?
No, no, no. It's not, and you don't miss anything we're saying. It's just distracting. But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
We've got, I would say, a shoestring budget, but that's still more than we got. So, yeah, I don't know why that's there.
Why is the headphone jack on the bottom and not on the top?
That's the redesign for iPhone 5.
Well,
and the new iPods.
No sense to me.
Everything's on the bottom on this one, except for the power button. Well, if you had your headphones plugged in and your power cord plugged in, you basically have your headphones going up and then back down.
Uh-huh.
So you've got cords coming in on both sides. On this one, they've kind of moved it all to the bottom, so you've got all your cords on one side. I think what they did is that once they decided they were going to change the dock connector, that they had an opportunity then to change more than just that. So this will work better with certain types of docks. That you just want to put in a headphone jack, or I don't know. I think it... it gives them a maybe an opportunity for accessories to work out a little better. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You'd have to ask the Apple engineers. It seems like they know what they're doing.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
They got the world by the balls with this whole iPhone thing, so.
And, yeah, I'd say they got a lot of the shaft, too. They're working on the tip. So, anyhow. The two of us play some goddamn video games.
We do. We play a lot of goddamn video games. Yeah. My God, I think I might be failing a class because I'm playing so many video games.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, thank you. I like the fact that you admire my dedication to my craft.
You have my admiration. That reminds me, when I was in classes, the game that I was playing the most was Seaman.
Seaman? Uh-huh. The foul-mouthed Seaman?
He wasn't foul-mouthed. If you were foul-mouthed, he would object, but he was not that I remember. To my memory, he was very foul mouthed. But yes, he was a creature. He was a sim of sorts on Dreamcast.
That's a good word for it.
It was one of the. It was Japanese as about as you can get.
Yeah, that's true.
It came with a microphone that you plugged into the controller and you held down A to speak. So the VMU went in, the little screen to memory card went in, and it'd give you little different prompts, and you'd hit A and speak. And you could talk to Seaman. It had voice recognition. And the craziest thing about Seaman, and I don't think this strikes too many people, is that all the crazy stuff that he would do was all on that disc. Like,
yeah,
you could connect to the Dreamcast to the internet, but that wasn't a game that did it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that, all the different scenarios and things that, and interactions you'd have with them were all pre-programmed by the programmers on that disc.
And it, there was like a,
it wasn't multitude.
Surrey. It was like a multitude of interactions.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was all kinds of stuff. I remember one that was seemed like the most random was I had just got with Samantha at the time, and he asked me at some point what I was going to be doing next week or whatever, and I said, you know, I'm going out with my girlfriend. He started asking me about her, you know, and he said, when is her birthday? And I was like, it's in September. And he goes, have you ever sang September by Earth, Wind, and Fire to her?
What?
I
was like, what the fuck? Z-Man, what is this?
And I was like, kind of like, well, I didn't even know how to take that. And I was like, what? Earth, Wind, and Fire? Wow, Z-Man. And then eventually, so Z-Man starts off as a Nautilus. And then the Nautilus kind of just, at some point, spontaneously coughs up a plume of little seamen, potential seamen,
mm-hmm.
that look like seamen.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, they all die off except for one.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one, I'm going to forget the stages. It's been over 10 years. But it basically started off as a little shrimp-looking thing that was like with a face, with like a baby face on it.
And that by far is Seaman's oddest feature.
Yes.
It's the fact that his lower, the rest of him is a fish,
he has a
for
pudgy,
want of a better word. But
his face looks like Andy Richter's face.
Yes, that's exactly right.
He had Andy Richter's face on a fish body.
With no hair. No hair at all.
No hair.
Just like a bald human face on top of this
no
fish
eyebrows.
Body. It's crazy.
And he had a little tube that stuck off the top of his head.
Oh, yeah. Like an anglerfish,
and he would use it. Well, it was also his butthole, as it turns out.
Really?
Because he if you told
surprising
if you said shit every now and then, he would fling that tube towards you, and shit would hit the screen and slide off.
That's disgusting.
It is. Well, don't be telling him to shit. And anyway, crazy ass game, and I'm dying for them to port it to the iPhone because it's perfect.
Oh, it sounds so insane.
But you'd have
insane.
It was a sim in as much as. You had to, it kept track of real time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're gone for days, he'd be neglected and he'd be mad at you and shit. Like,
would he ever die? Could you kill Seaman?
I think you could, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'd have to get a new Nautilus, yeah. You had to regulate the heat in the tank and the oxygen. And if you didn't regulate the heat, you'd freeze. And the oxygen, this tank would really start to get murky and cloudy and shit. So you'd have to sit there and just hold down the oxygen and let it go until it kind of balances out. And then you could, like, grow and harvest food for him.
Really?
Like, there was a separate screen where you had, like, a terrarium with, like, crickets and shit. I want to say crickets, might have been something else.
What the fuck is Seaman doing eating crickets? I mean, he's a sea man, so I'm sure.
I don't remember. It might not have been crickets. I'm not sure. But it was something, and you had to feed him every now and then.
Yeah.
So, and then eventually, he evolved again. So he went from like a shrimp or like a nautilus little thing to it was like a sperm to like a shrimp to I think there might have been some other thing, and then he turned into a fish, and then he turned into like a really big fish, like a carp, and then he turned into a frog.
A frog?
Yeah, at the end, his final evolutionary stage, if you like nurtured him enough, he would turn into a frog. And then the weird this weird thing would happen where the back of the aquarium, well, when he turns into a frog, it drains out pretty significantly, and there's a little bit of water in there, and then the rest of it's sand, and the back of it lifted up to reveal like an actual forest, and then he'd hop out into the forest, and that's just where he lived. And sometimes you come out and you'd come to turn it on and he wouldn't be there. You'd just be looking at the tank with this forest, and he's just not, he's out and about, you know. So you'd have to like call him and see if he'd show up, you know.
That sounds insane.
I think that game probably had more depth to it than a lot of people realized, you know.
It definitely had more depth like than I thought it did, because I remember reading an article about Seaman and like Game Informer or something like that, and it just sounded, granted I didn't read the whole article, but the entire premise of the game just sounded crazy. It sounds like a fish, it sounds like a fish sim, it sounds like having a fish, but occasionally this fish can talk to you and or fling shit at you.
Yeah, you could have conversations with him. And it was also narrated by Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy?
Leonard goddamn Nimoy.
Goddamn! There's just all facets upon facets to this game.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I really want them to Sega to port it to iPhone. It's a perfect game to do that with, because especially now it's connected all the time. You know, it can pull in just all kinds of stuff off the internet. You know, it could really be, like, amazing at this point. Well, Sega, get on it. I know you're listening.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
Port Seaman to iPhone, damn it. So anyway, you just went and seen
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
The remake.
Now,
by Fede Rodriguez or Alvarez or something.
I'm going to try not to spoil it because it just came out.
Oh my God.
But what do you think?
Well, I mean, if you've seen Evil Dead, if you've seen the first Evil Dead or the second Evil Dead, you pretty much know how the movie's going to go, because it follows the Evil Dead plot pretty closely, with a few alterations.
No, I got to say right off the bat, I got to admit, I don't know that I've ever seen Evil Dead.
Oh,
which
gosh.
Seems, it's one, now, I've often said, and I will readily admit, that there are a lot of movies that I should have seen that I never have.
That is one of them?
Yeah, I'm sure that's one of them. There's many others, but I've always was confused. Was there any kind of tie-in for Evil Dead and Army of Darkness?
Yes, of course. It goes from Evil Dead to Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness seems campy and almost like a comedy, no?
Yes.
Okay, so the
first Evil Dead was a straight-up horror flick, all right? Okay. Five college students go out to a secluded cabin in the woods. One of them finds a book, a very, very evil book.
Well, if this new one is an exact remake, without saying what it is, if there is,
it's not,
is there
it's,
anything that differs from the first one that may be able to be spoiled?
Very much so.
Okay, all right. Well,
there's a lot of differences, but it follows the same. This follows basically the premise of the first two Evil Dead films.
Okay.
Five college students go out to an abandoned cabin in the woods.
Right.
They find a book.
Mm-hmm.
One of them reads
the Necronomicon.
In this movie, it's not called the Necronomicon. It's just called the Book of the Dead.
Was it called the Necronomicon in the old one?
I think in the first one it wasn't called the Necronomicon, but in the second one it was, and in Army of Darkness it was.
Okay.
All right. Just in the first one, I think it was just called the Book of the Dead, with a Caput et Mortem or something like that.
Right.
And it was just like, and it's this very, very, very evil book. One of the kids reads from it, even despite the fact that when he finds it, it's in a room in which dead cat skeletons, juicy cat skeletons, are hanging from the ceiling. Also, the book itself is wrapped in just really thick black plastic and barbed wire. So there's just red flags going up all over the place on this book. And this dude's like, well, this seems like a fun thing to stick my nose into and find out what's going on with this book that happens to be bound in human skin. And across it, scrawled, no, not even scrawled, just like scratched into the book, are messages that saying, don't read from this book, you will die, stop reading right now. Just stuff like that all over the place. And so he continues to read it, and he says these magic words, and one of their number gets possessed by a demon. Because, like, you know, it's a demon possessing a person, the person is welcomed back into the cabin, and where she, you know, starts to wreck shit.
Right.
Just immediately. right off the bat. And so, and it deals with the rest.
You would swear demons have nothing better to do.
I know, right? I mean, in this case, it does differ from the first one in the fact that the demon actually has, like, an end game. Rather than just killing these random people, it's gonna kill them and then come to the earth to, you know, raise hell and stuff.
Right,
and
to live up to the name demon.
Yeah, to live up to the name demon. And so, yeah, and that's the basic premise of the movie, them fighting to keep themselves alive and this demon from coming to the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and also taking their souls.
So what do you think? You think it was a worthy remake?
Yes, I do.
Yeah?
Very much so.
Okay.
Very limited use of CGI, and very, very limited use of, like, you know, just like crazy ass effects, but most most of the stuff was like real. It's like there's the scene. It's in both movies. So I'm not spoiling anything. Where this girl gets like tied up by these like trees and then gets raped by the trees.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a fun scene.
I'm starting to come around.
Yeah, it's a fun scene. But it actually looks like
it's a fun scene.
It's not really a fun scene, but it's an amazing scene when you think about it. Because
it's not like it actually happens.
It's not actually this. Girl wasn't actually raped by a tree, although god damn it, did it sure look like it.
Oh really?
I mean, she gets just get
full
she,
penetration.
Nah, yeah the thing actually just goes up inside of her and then just doesn't leave.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that sounds familiar.
But it's just a great freaking scene, and made all the more so because it looks like the trees actually have, like, you know, wrapped onto her. I mean, there's like thorny branches around her. Like,
it didn't look like clearly foam rubber, like she was struggling with it.
No. I mean, it kind of looked like that in the first time.
Power Ranger weapons and shit.
Yeah, well, let's not go that far. But it was just like it did look kind of like, you know, strings plus branches are holding this woman down to the ground, and then she's being, you know, violated by the tree.
Right.
But yeah, and it's just, oh god.
So the demon possessed the tree in that instance?
Yes, it goes like the demon can like possess the darker essence, the darker like places on the edges of man's domain.
Right.
The forests, the bowers, the forgotten places.
Places that we should know better to be in.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're driving to an abandoned cabin in the woods, I mean, you'd have to think you'd have a pretty good reason for being there. In this case, they're trying to get one of their number, the same person who happens to get possessed, to kick heroin. Because apparently she's OD'd once before, and it was quite frightening since she legally died.
So she's sequestering herself. Yeah. Sequestering herself to get off of heroin.
Yeah, she's
like, goddamn.
I know, it's just, not a lot of good has happened to this chick, man. A lot of just crazy shit.
Wow. Well, so you'd recommend?
I would highly recommend seeing it. I saw it when I was all stoned, so.
What?
Yes.
Wait a minute.
I know, right? That seems completely out of character for someone like me, but it's true.
All right.
It's true, goddammit.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I would highly recommend seeing it. It's a lot of fun. And the gore in this, if you're after it for, you know, some blood and various viscera, then yes.
For me,
you will love
there's no such thing as too much gore.
Well, then you're going to love it. I'm not going to say it has more gore than The Thing or whatever, but it's close.
Okay. The gorier, the better. For me.
Well, then you're really gonna dig on
it,
this.
It bothers me to no extent for them to pan away and do all that stuff. Like, I'm not here to
there's
see
none of that shit
cutaway here. Shots.
Oh, no, there's none of that.
All right, good.
It's like in a picture in like a normal horror movie, you know, when like the monster or the demon or what have you go and advances towards them with like, you know, a sadistic grin or with like a big ass weapon in their hands.
And then it kind of just pans over their shoulder and the person screams and you see the silhouette of the house and the birds fly away.
Yeah. But there's none of that. I mean, like there's this one scene where, this is spoilers, all right, where this one of like the possessed people gets a hold of a crowbar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she starts beating on one of the dudes and the dude's like, has his hand up, he's like, no, don't do it, no, and she brings the crowbar down and it actually looks like his freaking fingers. It looks like his fingers actually get like broken and like you see like a shot of his hand after, like, you know, the crowbar has been taken away and it's like all gnarled and mangled and stuff,
you know. Maybe it's just me,
and then she just starts
beating him. I have a better artistic vision for directing horror films than I've ever actually seen put into practice.
Really?
For instance, now I haven't seen this one and I'm hoping to find a movie. There may be a movie like this out there, but listen, I'm going to try to describe this as best I can. In an instance like that where his hand gets broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have to imagine that when he's yelling no,
mm-hmm.
that the focus in that scene is on his hand. His hand's in the foreground. He may be slightly blurry.
Well,
it's
not quite in the foreground. You know, I mean, the camera doesn't focus on the hand. It's just like he has his hand up,
right.
and it's kind of like from his point of view, but the hand's not fully in the center of the shot.
And that's when it happens.
And she brings the crowbar down and she like kind of breaks the sand, brings back up again, and it sort of like goes up, and then it sort of like zooms up like right above them, right? Right. Not over their shoulder or anything like that, but right above them, and she's got the crowbar and she's bringing it down all over right. him, you know, like on his head and whatnot. Nice. And just
I like when that kind of stuff, like his hand being broken, happens almost incidentally, like
yeah.
the focus isn't there.
That's exactly right.
It makes it feel a lot more realistic and like visceral because the, you know, it's as if you're watching this happen as opposed to watching a movie that mm-hmm. is depicting it, you know.
You're full on watching this happen. I mean, it's got like that great sort of like 70s horror vibe to it. Did you ever see any like really old horror movies?
Yeah, some of the kind of grindhouse horror
stuff. So it's got kind of that sensibility to it, right. but not to like, you know, an absurd degree like say Planet Terror did,
right?
Yeah, but it's kind of got like the grindhouse feel. There's a couple of really just grindhousey shots of like, you know, zooming in on like the possessed chick that he's trapped down in the basement, which happens in both movies. Mm-hmm. And she's just sort of like looking up and she's making all like the weird, like unnatural possessed people right. movements or whatever.
I don't know that it originated in Silent Hill, but that was the first place I'd ever seen that in the game.
Oh, the first weird, the weird like herky jerky movements. Like yeah. there's like something trying to like figure out how all these like different muscles go together.
Right.
And there's like,
you remember the first time you seen that? Was it
the first time I saw that? I want to say it was like in The Exorcist or something like that. No, but I think it might have been like a place like Silent Hill or a place like The Ring.
Seeing
like Samara like sort of like pull herself out of like the and, like contort herself almost out of the,
you know, that didn't really strike me as well. I was just thinking about this on the way here that as far as horror movies go, I remember some movies will hit me a certain way mm-hmm. one time mm-hmm. and that's it,
and they will not do so ever.
I hate to keep bringing it up because it's embarrassing, but that was one of those movies where it hit me a certain way one time mm-hmm. and then afterwards it was like I'm watching a different movie. The Curse mm-hmm. was like that for me.
The Curse? The one with Christina Ricci and Jesse Eisenberg?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I got the name wrong, but it's the one with the chick with the hair.
Uh-huh.
It's in Japan. It takes place in Japan. They go to, like, this chick goes to this house that is for sale or something, and she's there, and the house is cursed. Mm-hmm. And
are you talking about The Grudge?
The Grudge, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's the movie. They made a movie called The Grudge that The Grudge is based on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Not the original, like Japanese Grudge.
The American remake.
The American remake.
The one with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Okay. So that movie, first time I think you see her when she goes up into the attic, that shot, it did that thing where. They'll give away thrills or what I'm sure there's
sometimes they do
pops I yeah. think they're called, you know, they'll give it away by the way it's shot.
Uh-huh.
You know, tracking shots usually will do it where a person will, you know, they'll be walking into a room just kind of casually tossing out a sentence, kind of assuming that the person they're talking to is still there.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they won't even be looking at the person. They uh-huh. and then of course they stop dead in their tracks and they're like, oh my god, you can see it coming a mile away.
Uh-huh.
There's different ways to shoot things, as if nothing was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
and then something does happen that you may not even catch. You know, that's when the shit gets scary, because you're going to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that shot was for me.
Mm-hmm.
When she goes up in the attic the first time, it doesn't look like that's going to be a shot where she sees this crazy shit, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
And that fucking scared the shit out of me when I see it in the theater.
Yeah.
Watching it since, I'm like, I guess because I know it's going to come, but there was nothing, complete nothing afterwards seeing it a second time.
Well, to me, that anticipation, like, of knowing that, you know, something's going to jump out from right in the corner and yell, like, mm-hmm. boo or something like that, that sort of, like, just, it really just sort of, like, twists the knife, as it were, because, like, I know something terrible is going to happen to these people, and I know it's going to happen soon, and it's probably going to happen in the shot, but I just, like, the anticipation of waiting to see how exactly it's going to happen, mm-hmm. when it's going to happen, how they're specifically going to jump out. Oh, my God, I live for that. I live for that.
I like that.
It works best, when you first see it, like, you know, when you don't actually know what's around the corner.
Right. There's no build up at all.
But there's build up. I mean, you feel it, like, within the context of the scene or whatever. Right. Like, you're watching a movie like Evil Dead or whatever, and like the music swells in a certain way, or they like look across the room in a certain way, and you know that, like, you know, that like big thrill or big kill is coming, right?
Right.
And so you're waiting to see it, and you're waiting, like, how exactly it's going to happen, what exactly they're going to do to try and like, you know, deal with it. And it's just like that anticipation is just great.
So that's so that, good. So what about the payoff?
The payoff in and of itself is great. I mean, sometimes because sometimes it like can exceed what you've like imagined can't happen or will happen, but sometimes it does not. I mean, and it's especially, it kind of loses its punch after you know exactly what's going to happen and when in the scene it's going to happen. Like movies, like if you notice like horror movies or whatnot, they seem to get shorter the second time you see them because that sort of like, you know, pulse pounding anticipation, that white knuckle, white knuckle like feeling you get is kind of gone.
Yeah.
But to me, it's still kind of there in movies like Paranormal Activity or like say the original Exorcist, the original Amityville Horror, or Cabin in the Woods even.
And, I don't know, to me that buildup, like my brain almost spoils it for me. Like the shit that I can fathom immediately in that instance is usually greater or different than what I ended up with. And I'm kind of just, I'm very rarely when there's a suspenseful buildup with some kind of payoff that I'm like freaked out about.
Were you like that way in that scene in Spider-Man 2? When Doc Ock first like, you know, becomes Doc Ock or whatever, he's in the hospital and the surgeons are preparing to like remove his like robotic arms or whatever, and it's like a whole surgical team, right? And the arms are like hanging like out like almost like spider legs or whatever, and they're about to do it and the arms like they're like alive and sentient, they don't have any of the shit, so they just start tearing up the surgical operating theater and the surgical team, and it's just like, and it all happens off camera, but it's some of the most blood curdling shit.
You know what it is? Is that that scene is silent. They cut all the music out of that scene.
Yeah, I know. And it's the thuds and it's the screams and it's just the snapping or whatever. Yeah, my God, it's so good. it's a perfect, like, it's almost like unexpected horror scene.
Yeah, it's very effective because they used no music at all. There was no. I don't know. I can't remember if there's a buildup or not.
There was kind of a buildup. I mean,
because I know you see them slowly starting to move and twitch and come alive, but I don't know if there was a big orchestral buildup to all the silence.
It's sort of like when it flashes to the surgical scene or whatever. When it cuts to them preparing to like chop off the arms, like the surgeon's just talking about, you know, it's like, well, it looks like we gotta get these arms off, otherwise, you know, this guy's not gonna be doing too well. And you ever take shot class? And he's like saying
surgical circular saw.
It's all stainless. Well, I mean, like, what else are you gonna do with those damn things?
Well, I know you take a circular saw to them. The fact that he has a stainless one that he apparently uses for surgery is absurd to me.
Well, I mean, how are you gonna get through like a bone, like say the femur? You know, you gotta get through something like that quickly or whatever.
The ones that I've seen are very compact.
They're a little bit smaller.
But yeah, I guess they have like a full blown like just a buzzsaw in the surgical theater.
Well, that part of it is kind of ridiculous, and it kind of like harkens back to Evil Dead just a little bit.
Like if he just pulled out like a DeWalt, I would have been like, all right, well that makes sense. You know, these need to be surgical and shit. But
well, maybe like they have like, you know, print stuff like that. Then it has to enter a hall. It has to all be sterile. I mean, you have to like sterilize every nook and cranny to make sure the patient doesn't develop sepsis.
Well, when they pull out the surgical saw, they try to saw off four robotic limbs off Dr. Octopus. I should be suspending my disbelief for that portion. That's but true. I can't help it. So anyway, those buildups, I got kind of off my train of thought, but they're much better for me when there's no buildup. And the buildups are more intense for me when there's no payoff. Which is weird. Silent Hill does that. Silent Hill still, for me, Silent Hill 2, and one of the ones on Xbox, I didn't get to finish it, but Silent Hill 2 for me is still like one of the most intense, frightening experiences I've had.
Yeah.
Where I can't stand it anymore and I might have to take a break, you know? But then eventually I call myself a pussy and hunker down. But, man, that's still sound. Is, you know, extremely important in those instances. Put the headphones on, block out everything, turn off the lights, you know, then you're set, you know.
Then you're ready.
Yeah. And to me, that's the only way to play those games. You can't play it when someone's vacuuming, you know.
It sort of, like, takes you out of the whole moment.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so good for Evil Dead.
Yes, very good.
Whoops.
There's not, like, fans of, like, the... second Evil Dead will, you know, bear everything on this, because, like, the second Evil Dead is kind of, like, comedic. And, like, there's, like, you know, there's a lot more of the fake monsters and whatever. It's slightly ridiculous, but it's like the most demented Looney Tune you ever saw, with, like, people dying, right, you know, as a result of these horrible, horrible things that are happening to them. But it's all
just
kind of, like,
so Looney Tune's just slightly more realistic.
Yeah.
Because there are consequences.
Yeah, they're, like, you know, like, it's not happening to a cartoon character, it's happening to, like, an actual person. And
right.
There's, like, and like, says people morph into, like, crazy monsters with, like, you know, tentacles and wings and shit.
Well, speaking of crazy monsters and tentacles and all that shit, and demons,
yeah.
Been playing Devil May Cry.
Oh, yeah. I've heard great things about this game. No, yeah. I have not played it.
So, when it was first announced, there was some, I guess, some controversy about Dante.
Mm-hmm.
And about Dante, they changed the character.
A little bit, yes.
That's the thing. A little bit.
He's still Dante. He still kills things with two guns and a sword, and he still slays. I mean,
and he's still kind of wisecracks, and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So this one, I'm not sure really what the aim was for this one. I don't know if it's certainly not more realistic. I think it's just the
graphics are a little bit better. And
for sure.
And it does have, like, sort of a more realistic style.
It feels a little grittier.
Yes.
You know, but not really for me. I don't know. Now, I haven't played all the Devil May Cry's. I never played the first one. I played the second one, and I played the fourth. I skipped three.
The third one was the best, I think.
That's what everyone says.
The third one was the best. The first one was kind of boring, in my opinion. I played the first one, and
right.
I couldn't get through it. And I was like, I was expecting, you know, nonstop action or whatever. And this one,
right.
It kind of played like, I don't want to say it played like Onimusha, but it played like a slightly faster version of Onimusha.
That makes sense. Yeah, I had that. I played the shit out of Onimusha.
Oh, I love those games.
I did everything there was to do, even the crazy levels. You go down and down and down and get the roof. Yeah. So anyway, this one is, you know, still made by Capcom.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed Dante. I like Dante. I like this Dante more than the previous Dantes.
I kind of miss the red jacket, to be honest. But beyond that,
he's not as iconic.
Yeah,
because he's just kind of he looks very kind of plain.
Yeah, he looks kind of like just like a dude. He just kind of looks like a dude with no shirt and a big ass jacket.
But I like him.
Yeah,
he's. I think he's likable. The character model looks really good. The facial animations and the acting in it is pretty goddamn good. A lot better than I expected it to be.
From a Devil May Cry game.
For a Devil May Cry game and for a beat 'em up, you know, and for a Capcom game, and there's all these other reasons why it shouldn't be as good as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, Dante is a much more convincing, he emotes more convincingly than Isaac does in Dead Space 3 for me.
Really?
Yeah.
What about Dead Space 2?
I don't know. I don't, that's not as fresh on my mind to compare, but I'm playing both right now.
How was Dead Space 3?
It's pretty good. It's still Dead Space. I like the changes they made where you get ammo.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to get all these different things. They've simplified the inventory a little bit. You have to do much less management. In fact, I go through big, big chunks without ever bringing up my HUD.
Really?
Yeah. So that's kind of nice. But, it's good. I like Dead Space. I like that it's as violent as it is. I love making Isaac stomp on shit and to hear him fucking cuss and all that. Like, that's good. But, and Dead Space is good, but that's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make is that, to me, now the acting in it, I was trying to think, what does this remind me of? Like, the level of acting in it. And I would put it at Law and Order status.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of watching.
Wait, Law and Order status? Law and Order Special Victims Unit, or Law and
SVU.
Order
SVU. That's all. I only
SVU,
watch SVU. Yeah.
I'm surprised SVU has outlived the original Law and Order
by
like several years.
Well, Mariska Hargitay, good grief.
Really?
She still does it for me, yeah.
She was way hotter back in the day.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, that's what it reminded me of. Like, that, it was, like, Law and Order is not as serious as some dramas are.
Yeah.
Like, they have a flow that they always follow. There's a structure to it, but it has a level of acting that's somewhere between
soap opera
and something better. Yeah, I guess that would be it. Yeah, that's about as good as an example I can come up with. You got what I was thinking.
I hesitate to call something like Law and Order primetime drama, like The Following. Like, what's that,
right.
that show that's on now, that's primetime drama. It's somewhere between those two.
Yeah, and that's where I would put Devil May Cry. That's what it felt most like to me. But, that being said, done as well as that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the same, though, to me, it seems like. Dante is in he lives in, I guess, the real world. I don't know. There's some company that is ran by a demon.
Yeah.
And they control people through slurm, essentially. It's a soda that is made by a disgusting worm, and it controls people's thoughts. So.
It's slurm.
And then Dante finds out. He doesn't realize he's not a human, and his brother Virgil is there. You know, they're like what look like twins, but I guess
they're two half demon children fathered by Sparta.
Yeah, the Nephilim. Right.
Yeah.
That's all true still.
Yeah.
They didn't change any of that. And Virgil seeks out Dante, finds it finally, and kind of shows Dante that he, where he came from, his roots and all that. What I don't get about it is that Dante doesn't realize he's not a human, but. He's very used to going into limbo and fighting demons. I don't understand. I don't really get that part of it.
Well, like, I mean, if that stuff just sort of happened to you, I mean, you know, you wouldn't automatically assume that you're half demon or whatever.
I suppose. But
I mean, he's like certainly like much tougher and much more acrobatic or whatever than
anyone. I'll put it this way: for someone that goes into limbo and knows. He has to kill demons to get out.
Yeah.
When Virgil approaches him with with what is a true story, he's a little too suspicious and skeptical of his brother.
Well, I mean, maybe he wasn't suspicious of the story. Maybe he was suspicious of his brother because his brother does turn out to be a dick.
Well, in this one so far, he's on the up and up so far, but I haven't completed it yet. I'm in chapter 10 or something like that. I'm going for the main demon for it coming up here. Anyway, you. It takes place half in the real world, half in limbo. I just got the last upgrade I got was the devil trigger,
mm-hmm.
Or demon trigger, demon devil. I don't know. I think it's devil trigger.
Is it one of the close range weapons or is it one of the long range?
It's a mode you go into. It's like the Devil May Cry Super Saiyan mode.
Oh yeah, when his hair turns white and his jacket gets a little crazier.
You got it. I think it's called Devil Trigger. Anyway, that happens pretty late in the game. So I've been playing it, and it's fun. I've been playing on hard.
Mm-hmm. You're enjoying it so far?
And yeah. It's not very hard, though, to be honest.
Really?
Like, I'm pretty good at beat 'em up, so I'm not, like, you know, I'm not that good. I don't get, like, triple S rankings or anything like that.
Yeah.
S, maybe, you know, here and there. It's... Few continues used here and there, but that's just because I need to be more careful, that kind of thing. But at any rate, I like it. It's pretty good. It's fun to play. I kind of like the way that their combat works. Basically, you would get your guns, Ebony and Ivory. You get Rebellion, the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Ebony and Ivory are X. Rebellion, the sword, is Y. A is jump, obviously. B is another weapon you end up getting,
mm-hmm.
which is... let's see. There's a few different ones that you can use. Oh, no. B is pop-up.
Mm-hmm.
B is pop-up and smash down. This was. So then you get the ability to change Rebellion into an axe.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hold down the right trigger, and it just turns into an axe. Now you're swinging an axe around. So you just switch on the fly like that. You let go of X, you're back to Rebellion. Then you get L. It turns it into a whip.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a whip? No, a scythe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get different ones after that. Then you get these, like, gauntlets, basically, like big mitts. Rebellion turns into, like, these, like, you know, you've seen them before.
I saw them in what was prominently in God of War 3.
God of War.
Like the Cestus gauntlets.
And also Prototype.
Oh, yeah.
You ever play Prototype?
It's been quite some time.
I like those games.
You like Prototype?
I do.
I was lukewarm to it.
They're not great, but...
Prototype made me want to play Infamous.
Okay.
Yeah,
I can see that.
Have you played Infamous before?
Yeah. I think... I don't know. I liked the game. I liked the gameplay. I don't like any of the characters.
Really?
I think his buddy is, like...
Reprehensible?
He is So obnoxiously bad that I can't stand to even look at him. Like, I can't, that is the stupidest character.
Well, doesn't he end up like betraying him like several times?
he's a terrible character. Like, there's nothing redeeming about him. He's voiced terribly. His character model is ridiculous looking. He lives on a roof for some reason. Like,
roofs are cool.
I don't like. Anyway, I'm getting off the topic. You can then switch up with the D-pad which trigger turns into what weapon, and so there are a bunch of combos that you can do, different pop-ups, knockdowns. They constantly feed you upgrades, mm-hmm. and there's so many that it's just a constant progression. Like, you upgrade your stuff probably 3 times in a level, mm-hmm. and then a couple of upgrades in between levels. So you're constantly upgrading, which is nice. It makes you feel like you're moving. Mm-hmm. A lot of platforming, different power-ups to help you go farther, do different things. One of the abilities when you hold the right trigger and X is you have like your sword turns into like this whip claw thing that will drag things towards you. Mm-hmm. When you hold L and X, your scythe turns into a whip that pulls you towards it. Mm-hmm. And use that in platforming, so you have to like kind of double jump, sail, whip things towards you, and then kind of whip towards it. And you know, it's pretty cool. The traversal platforming feels the way combat does.
So it's as fluid and smooth as combat.
It is. If you master kind of switching between left trigger, right trigger, and jumping, you know, kind of it's the same principle. Yeah. Managing what powers you're using and when exactly you're using them. Yeah. So it's pretty good. I'm digging it so far, and I'm glad I got it. The soundtrack's really good too. Yeah. Like, it's super like grindy metal, mm-hmm. Which feels extremely appropriate for the setting. So the character model's all good. The voice acting looks good. Some of the creatures in it too are really cool looking. Like, they're run-of-the-mill in as much as they're giant demons that Dante has to fight, but they're designed really fucking cool looking. Lots of detail. There's one thing that you have to fight that makes the slurm, mm-hmm. and it's got it looks. Have you ever seen Rubber Johnny? Rubber Johnny is an Aphex Twin. I think it's Aphex Twin. It's been a while since I'm almost certain it's an Aphex Twin video, and it's. Have you seen any Aphex Twin videos?
I've never even seen or heard about any of this.
Oh, good lord. If you watch some, Aphex Twin has like the creepiest, fucking weirdest music videos that I can name of anybody I've ever seen. One of them is called Rubber Johnny, and it's still one of the weirdest fucking things I've ever seen ever.
Yeah.
And that's what this thing looks like. It looks like there's a few things in this game that look like Rubber Johnny to me. I have to imagine they took some inspiration from Aphex Twin.
Well, if you get a chance to meet him, ask them about it. It's like, hey, did you ever see Aphex Twin, Rubber Johnny, all that shit? What's
up with Rubber Johnny, huh? Anyway, there's this thing that it's got so much. This slug thing that makes the slurm has like, it's so engorged and shit that when it tries to look up at you, like, its back, it's hanging upside down in this weird position. Its back fat is over the top of its face, so when it goes to look at you, it has to push the fat out of its face to get a good look at you, and it's all fucking gross and
that's disgusting.
It's funny, like, Dante goes in there like, I'm going to kill you, you know, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but he goes like, I'm going to kill you, and that thing's like, you think you're gonna kill me? Fuck you! You know, I've been around. I'm 1,200 years old, and Dante's like, "Fuck you!" And he goes, "Fuck you!" Like, it's for a Devil May Cry game. Like, the writing and the voice acting and the performance, performance capture stuff is all pretty good. Yeah. Like, I'm impressed by it. Yeah. So I've been having a blast with that. What have you been playing?
I just recently finished BioShock Infinite, and I was and still am over the moon about that fucking game.
Really?
It's a beautiful game.
I need to play it.
You do need to play it. Yeah. I mean, it is... Oof. it's perfect. Like, yeah. It's really good.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the variety of enemies, it's kind of lacking, but whatever. It's still really, really fun. Mm-hmm. Combat works a lot like BioShock 2, if you ever play BioShock 2. I mean, you've got a simultaneous use of plasmas. They call them Vigors. They call them Vigors in this game. And your guns or whatever.
What are they called? Vigors, right?
Vigors. Okay. Vigors, yeah.
Yeah.
And you, what happened, and like how you gain access to your videos is you find them, you know, throughout the world of Colombia. It's like they're like snake oil, basically. But they, and they come in these, all these, like these really just intricately detailed bottles or whatever. Like, right. The, like there's this one plasmid called Charge, and the bottle, it comes in a shape like a ram's head or whatever with a cork in it. And every time you like, and every time you drink one of the, you like drink one of the vigors for the first time, like something really weird happens to your hands. Mm-hmm. Like when you drink the Devil's Kiss vigor, which is basically your grenades, you conjure up a grenade, you throw it, it has a fuse, and then it goes off and showers the enemy with explosive hot death.
Okay.
Right? And you drink, and you drink the vigor, right? And your hands, like, they light on fire, and they're, and your fingers, just all the meat and flesh just gets burned right off him, and you see, like, and like, and he's left holding, like, these skeletal fingers, and,
really?
And he's just like, ah!
Sinewy and weird.
And then, you know, and then it ends, and the, your hands are, like, and your hands are back to normal.
Right.
And it's just, every vigor is different, and it's just super weird, like, there's this
one. I remember them doing that kind of stuff in the old Bioshock.
Yeah, but it was never like this serious and okay. Like when it, and like when it happened, I mean, like the effect, like the effect kind of like stuck around,
right,
or whatever, in the original Bioshock, like once, as long as he had it active, like his hand would, like, you know, pulse and stuff like that, and it would do the same, and it would do the same in this one. I mean, occasionally while you've got like a vigor active, like a murder of crows or whatever, you can send murderous crows to harass your enemies,
right.
like your fingernails sometimes lengthen into like claws, and little black feathers start poking out of your skin,
right.
And when you've got like the bucking bronco vigor active, you can sort of like telekinesis your enemies, like you can cause them to float up in the air, and then you can wail on them with vigors or with guns or whatever. Like there's like cracks that appear in your skin, like these magma cracks that appear in your skin.
That's pretty cool.
It just, and it's great, and the entire game has tiny little details like that. All the guns are hyper detailed, the enemies are hyper detailed, like the environment is just beautiful, like in just like in depth and scope, and just the amount of time that was paid to each and every little piece of the environment.
Yeah,
and it's full of like weird anachronistic things, like the majority of the game, like the entirety of the game, takes place on this floating city called Colombia.
Right,
and Colombia was founded in 1893 by this guy named Comstock, and it broke from the United States in 1908 or something like that, shortly after like the Boxer Rebellion in China. And so you're Booker DeWitt, an ex-Pinkerton agent. You're sent up into Colombia to rescue this woman called Elizabeth, and Colombia is experiencing these things called tears. Now tears are windows into different worlds, like different times, different worlds.
Time-space anomalies?
Yeah, time, space, like weird time-space anomalies. There's this one, like in a later level of the game, where it's like a tear in the middle of like this music studio. And it constantly plays like music from like the 80s or whatever.
Right.
So it, like there, so it's got like Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and there's this one from the 70s. There's this one CCR, Fortunate Son. This one CCR, Son, Fortunate Son. And then there's like the most prominent one, like, and it's just beautifully done with this barbershop quartet. It's God Only Knows by the Beach Boys.
Okay.
And like the entire city is just full of stuff like that. It's like the best steampunk game you've ever played.
Right.
And it's not quite steampunk because I've got like interesting stuff like that, but it just feels extremely steampunky to me in the best way possible.
Right. Like what happens when a place segments and is left to its own devices in the path it takes. I love that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's so good.
I love that plausible alternate reality stuff.
And it gets weirder because like the person you're sent to rescue, Elizabeth, has control over these tears. So you use them in combat, and you use them to open up tears to like different weapons and whatnot. Like during like battle or whatever, you can open tears so that a gun automaton appears in the field and starts wailing on your enemies.
Okay.
Or you can like cause certain weapons to appear, like a machine gun or like a Gatling gun or whatever, if you need it, or health or salts, which are your fuel for vigors, or whatever. And she can also like transport you to different versions of Colombia, and that's occasionally you have to do that to advance the story. Like there's this one mission where you have to rescue this guy named Chen Lin, and he's been taken by the Colombia police, who are just, the entire society is racist as fuck.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It's like every person in Colombia, every white person in Colombia is extremely racist.
No, I've heard a lot of people talk about this game.
Yeah.
And they all mention that part of it. Did they ever use the N-word?
No.
Okay.
They use they say Negro every once in a while, or darky or something like that, but they never explicitly use the N word.
Full N word.
Yeah, they don't go full N word. But
good.
It's.
Funny. I don't think it could be done in good taste in almost any.
It could have been done.
Not in a fantasy context. It seems like unnecessary.
Well, they have like different. They have like separate bathrooms, you know, for white. And they have like separate. The white. They have like the white bathrooms, and they have like, you know, the Irish and the colored bathrooms or whatever. And like, there's like this, like it's very kind of like a class warfare-y. Like it's
classes.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of evokes like the spirit of like the early 20th century and the late 19th century. You know, there's labor unions all over the place, but because it's like the society that was founded on the ultimate of American ideals. I mean, literally, they worship the founding fathers as like saints. Mm. Like Washington came down and gave unto them the sword. Jefferson came down and gave unto them the scroll. And Ben Franklin came down and gave unto them the key of industry or whatever.
Right.
And because of those American ideals, like they really like pull yourself up by your bootstraps or whatever. Like you cannot organize labor unions whatsoever, and it's given rise to this militant anarchist faction called the Vox Populi. And throughout the game, you're constantly having to deal with both Columbia's authorities and the Vox Populi, who are fighting each other for control of the city. And it's just, oh my god.
Neither of which are very admirable, from what I hear.
Neither of which are good people at all. I mean, yeah. the Vox are straight up bloodthirsty anarchists, right, who are out to kill as many people as they can. Maybe not kill as many people as they can, but they're not out to you know, better the people. They just they want what they think is theirs.
Right, right.
And the founders are, you know, struggling to preserve this quote unquote utopian ideal of American purity, pure American purity, something like that.
Right.
And because it's like a flying city in the clouds, powered by you know, weird pseudoscience and metaphysics, right, or whatever, they've got like these crazy inventions, or they've got like three inventions, like the Vigors, like, you know, machine guns, like automatons that, you know, fire at you. Like the one of the most like difficult enemies to defeat in the game is the motorized Patriot, and it's just like this robot, but it's got like these porcelain faces of like the president or whatever. There's two versions of the motorized Patriots. There's Washington, and then there's Lincoln, whom Comstock views as like the great apostate for, you know, freeing the slaves and taking America into the Civil War or whatever. So every time you see Lincoln, he's got like red eyes and he's got like these devil horns coming out of the top of his head. Oh my god, it's great.
I keep hearing about how you know, how detailed and well thought out this world is, and I can't wait to play it. I love the first two BioShock games, and I'll be playing this one for sure. Have anything to do with the first two games?
None at all. I mean, in as much as the fact that it's like a different version of Rapture. I mean, it's just there's one scene in the game where you get transported to, you know, Rapture, where you get transported to Rapture proper, like a little bit before everything went to shit,
right?
Or a little bit before everything went to shit, or whatever. And it's just like, and I don't want to spoil it for you,
it kind of acknowledge that the first games exist. Is it possible that it's taking place on the same planet?
No.
Okay.
It's not possible at all. But it's just like a lot. It evokes like the first two BioShock games almost exactly. You know.
A lot of the stuff that you mentioned, you know, as far as like the Vigors and the segmented populace, the people that have the classist society, the automatons, and all that stuff, kind of is
it evokes BioShock. There's like it follows the exact same plot structure. There's this guy, he's trying to get to this like magical, fantastic city that's set in a place where no city could possibly exist, and he does so through a lighthouse. And while he's in the city, he has to, you know, overthrow this tyrannical dictator and save tiny children, while at the same time fighting crazed denizens of the city, as well as, you know, these products of science gone wrong.
And
he uses like, you know, fantastic like sort of retro futuristic weapons to do it, as well as these magical powers gained to him through either something he ingests or injects.
Right. That's something, man. I've been thinking about the new generation of consoles and how a lot of developers are saying, you know, now that they have the 16 gigs of memory and they have all these tools at their disposal, that games are going to be more realistic than ever. I'm not convinced that's going to be the case. Yes, you have a more powerful system, but do you have what it takes to create an environment that you're going to want to be in and, you know, be convincing. You know, there's a, that's a very small piece of the, what seems like the total equation. And if a game like Bioshock Infinite could come out and create a world like that on what is now limited hardware, I'd love to see what they can do on a more beefy console.
Something like the PS4. What's the Xbox's new thing called?
Code name is Durango right now.
Durango? It doesn't even have like a designation or whatever?
No, they're being super secretive about it. Like nothing has leaked so far. So hopefully by the time E3 rolls around, it'll be lots of good surprises from what it's going to be. Well, I guess from what I've heard so far, people are rumoring that it's going to be an always connected console. That seems like a huge mistake if they end up doing that. So who knows? Who knows what's going to end up happening there? But
wait, aren't computers like basically always connected consoles?
Yeah, but I think a computer kind of you can kind of get away with that a little bit on a computer.
Yeah,
chances
like,
are you're going to be connected to the internet if you have a computer.
Yeah, and there's more like you know ease of modification where it comes to a computer where it's a little bit more difficult to do that. With
Doesn't it seem weird that not too long ago we had computers that and no internet?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell's the point?
I know.
That's so weird.
I was at Mike's place earlier today, and he was telling me about how one of his computers doesn't have, like, a CD-ROM drive. It has, like, a DVD-ROM drive, but no CD-ROM drive. Mm-hmm. And I just thought to myself, oh, yeah, that used to be a thing. That used to be a thing. You could either play one or the other. You can play
PS1
both.
Games work.
So I know.
Yeah, crazy. So, real quick, let's see how long we got it going here. I wanted to talk about Avengers Arena.
Is that a thing?
It is.
Oh yeah, it's the book. It's the only book that X-23 is a part of now.
That is correct. So naturally, I'm reading it.
Yes, you are.
And I brought it up last week, but I only remembered the first half of the first comic. Like mm-hmm. I didn't even remember how they got there. Mm-hmm. I read it, but I didn't remember it. Well, it's a little more fresh on my mind nowadays. And basically, what it is the Avengers Academy has a bunch of students in it. Most of them, a lot of people would never have heard of. I don't know who most
of them are.
I've never seen most of them. So they all of a sudden end up on this island,
mm-hmm.
And they're put there by Arcade. And this is now like the new version of Murder World, right? So Arcade, he's back now. No
First
explanation.
Of all, how did he get a hold of all these young heroes who are meant to be at this super secret Avengers Training Academy?
No explanation. But they do, not so far anyway. I don't know. I'm not too knowledgeable about Arcade. I know that what he's done, I don't remember how he's done it. Like, he's been able to get all these X-Men and put them in a pinball machine. I don't know how he did it.
How did he do that? I have no idea.
I don't think the plot cares about how he did it. It's just important.
It's just there's a bunch of Avengers doing Battle Royale.
The best way to do it is to not acknowledge it, that he was able to do it somehow.
Yeah.
They do talk about it in the beginning. They're like, how did we get here? And they were all suspended, kind of powerless. He was able to. He had to dress some of them apparently in their uniforms and costumes and all of that because he broke into the place they were staying and abducted them all. So now they're on this island. Now all of this reeks of Battle Royale and Hunger Games, right?
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing. And the cover of one of the
reflects Battle Royale.
One of them is Battle Royale. One of them is the Hunger Games, where it's got the big flaming logo, but
really?
It has AA on it.
Yeah, that's kind
of
cool.
And then I think every cover has a reference to something on it. I think one of them might be Lord of the Flies.
I know, I've seen that one.
Yeah,
on the beach.
Yeah. So. They Arcade tells them, look, I've put you here. I want to see you guys fight, basically, and kill, you know, the last person surviving will win.
Last person surviving lives.
Yeah. The last liver lives. You know, they all kind of band together immediately. They're like, you know, fuck this guy. And, they try to attack him and everything. And then someone eventually says, why do you think you're going to be able to harm him? He had complete control over our bodies 5 minutes ago, you know, and he's here in front of us. Like, he understands what he's doing, and they can't hurt him. He is in complete control of this world. And a couple days go by of them trying to figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to get out of this situation, and no one really comes up with anything. There's one chick, I can't remember her name, but she can enchant things. She mm-hmm. does spells and stuff by cutting on herself, which seems unnecessary.
That does seem unnecessary.
Is that
the chick from the Runaways? Because I swear to God, it looks like sort of like a cross between like the Runaways and like Young Avengers or something like that.
I think there are a handful of Runaways in it, but yeah. I didn't follow the Runaways, so I don't know for sure.
See, the person who would know.
Yeah.
Should call him. Loves the Runaways.
Well, he's closing tonight, so I did think about calling him, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, but he's working, so. So,
you still have that Goodwill job?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or some similar thrift store. Yeah. At least, as far as I know, I don't think it's changed. So, anyhow,
that's really
they start kind of banding together into smaller groups, and eventually Darkhawk shows up.
Yeah, what the fuck is Darkhawk doing on the island?
Don't know yet. Don't know yet. He's just there. And Darkhawk, you know, has this crazy suit with all these abilities. And at some point, Darkhawk gets his gem ripped the fuck out of him.
Well, that's not good. That is
Darkhawk. He is presumed dead at this point.
Well, I would think so.
But he's got a question mark instead of an X over his face. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
have children actually died?
So, one dies immediately.
Like, actually dead.
Now, whether or not this is going to stay canon and they're not going to retcon all this shit remains to be seen. I have to imagine if they kill off all of these characters, it's going to get retconned, but I don't know. It seems to me, and my view on this is completely skewed, but X-23 seems like the most significant character out of the bunch.
She seems like the one who would probably survive Death Island.
That's what I'm thinking, and so far she's has no problem surviving this place. Like, she's doing swimmingly on this place, so...
Well, I mean, she was an assassin for, like, you know, God knows how many years, yeah. So... Yeah,
she was raised as an assassin.
She's probably
going to
be okay.
she's got the natural inclinations of Wolverine as far as hunting and all that shit goes, and plus she was raised from birth to be an assassin. Seems very unlikely. She can be killed. Well, X-23 can be killed a lot more easily than Wolverine.
How so?
She doesn't have an adamantium skeleton.
But what about her claws? Her claws are quite clearly adamantium. Her
claws are adamantium. That's the only part on her that is adamantium. They were removed from her as a child and coated in adamantium and put back into her.
I see.
So she can go out on missions, but they didn't want to coat her skeleton in adamantium before she finished growing, and then she escaped from the facility before that process actually happened.
I see. Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense.
But her healing factor, I guess, is increased because she doesn't have the adamantium skeleton like Wolverine.
Yeah.
Like, her body doesn't have to fight it off constantly like Wolverine's does, so her healing factor is supposed to be better than Wolverine.
That's a question I've always wondered about, like, Wolverine, because occasionally Wolverine has lost limbs and whatnot. He has, broken bones have occurred, even despite the adamantium stuff. When they grow back, I mean, do his bones remain coated in adamantium?
It would seem to me that his bones would heal together, yeah, but the adamantium would remain damaged.
Like, there would no longer be adamantium on, like, the arm if he got it, like, cut off or something like that.
I think if it were to, like take his arm, for instance, like, yeah, his upper arm.
Yeah.
If it were to break, the adamantium itself would split and there'd be bone inside.
Yes.
The bone could heal back together in exactly the same way it would, but the adamantium would still have a crack through it.
Yes, that's true.
Meaning that his arm then can be broken pretty easily at that point.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever explained that before.
Yeah.
In Ultimate Universe, Hulk rips Wolverine in half, throws his legs up the side of a mountain, and there has to be... This is the part about Wolverine I don't understand. Like, you can coat bones in adamantium,
but that doesn't mean they're going to
bond them together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't have Wolverine's body, like, manufacture organic adamantium. It's just not going to happen.
Came out of an era where people... Well, I don't... First of all, he was created without any inclination that we would be sitting here talking about him right now. And the lore around him and shit really makes no sense at all. First of all, even if, like, adamantium can be unimaginably rigid and hard,
yes,
and sharp, but how sharp can it possibly be? It can only be possibly so sharp, right? Like,
well, I mean,
how fine can it possibly be?
If it's like the hardest metal on Earth, and like, say it like never loses its edge because it's like, you know, the hardest, most like
right, never gets dull makes sense, but yes, how honed can the edge possibly be? To enough, and then how much strength would it need, even if it were able to pierce like a foot of steel, to slice through the damn thing? Like,
you have to imagine that the claws that Wolverine has, I mean, while they are kind of like coated on his like original like bone claws, have been like machined to within like a truly scalpel fine degree.
I would argue that it has to be much finer than a scalpel to do the things that it does.
Really.
But it's a fucking comic book world, so who knows? I remember distinctly Wolverine running, I think, from, like, Hellfire Club or something like that, and they threw something that that he was after, and he went to jump up to get it, and he couldn't quite reach, so he extracted his claws and caught them with his claws. This, like, thing. It's like some metal thing. I don't remember what it was, but it didn't damage it. If it was thrown with any velocity at all, my understanding is that
it would have gone right through his claws.
It would, yeah, it would be obliterated. Anyway, I remember one time writing into Wizard Magazine asking, because these are the people, these are the authority that owe me answers.
They
right?
should probably know. I mean, much more so than the actual writers.
If Wolverine's claws are stored in his forearm,
yes,
and he extracts them from his hand would have to be in a very specific position for them to come out where they come out every time. If he bends his wrist like he is always apt to do when mm-hmm. they come out, they shoot out the top of his wrist mm-hmm. every time. But
well, I mean, one would assume they're like it's not like in his hand, it's not like in his wrist. I mean, they're in his forearm, and then they sort of like engage down and down his knuckles. I mean, like they kind of like explained it after like Wolverine got all his adamantium like ripped out of him by Magneto during like the mid-90s or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like his bone claws are like in like a compartment almost.
I think one of the X-Men movies. Yeah, well, he would have to have an adamantium chute, essentially, that goes from his upper arm to the top of his hand.
Well, it's like, they wouldn't, like, need the chute. I mean, there'd be, like, you know, the bone chutes or whatever that have been coated with adamantium.
I love these conversations, by the way, but imagine if your wrist was bent like this.
Yes.
And now the claws are coming out.
Right.
Your wrist would have to straighten out at some point to accommodate them. They'd have to. Unless the claws can make this 90-degree turn because they're so short somehow. But they're not. They're adamantium.
So
if they come out, they're going to come straight out the top. They can't make the turn. They're either going to come out at the front of the wrist or the back of the arm when they make this turn. They have to. Hmm. But of course, it's
it could be like a reflex action, like when a cat's claws like come out or whatever. Like you'd expect, like you'd have to expect that his claws would like come out in a very specific way, that, like every time, otherwise, like he'd be like pricking himself, poking himself.
The problem is the length, the length, and the fact that he has a bendable wrist. Anyway,
I have to imagine there's like a creature out there that has like retractable claws that are of substantial size enough that we're constantly wondering like how exactly like. His claws or whatever don't like poke through the back of his finger.
I think
the back of his like hands.
They fold in like a lion's claws or a cat's. They kind of fold in. They have an area for them to kind of go into to mm-hmm. recess into, but they never actually
sort of like go along
they don't
like the toe.
Get sucked up into the rest of the arm.
Let's see.
Have we spent enough time talking?
No, we have not. Okay. I don't think we've gotten...
Well, I wanted to finish Avengers Arena.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Well, so it's, you know, we're only so far along, but we're in the comic series right now. I think there's only about 6 issues that have been out. And so far in the comic, 2 people are dead and Darkhawk is missing. Hmm. Darkhawk shows up for a second and is gone almost immediately. He doesn't get to really do anything. But the kids are kind of out in these like little factions now, and there's some of the love interests and shit that mm-hmm. were been playing out in the mansion before they got abducted are starting to kind of come to light. Mm-hmm. Kid Britain mm-hmm. is a little fucking twat. Right?
Is he like the son of like Captain Britain or something like that?
He's a version of Captain Britain from another universe.
Ah.
And his powers, I guess, like Captain Britain's, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest,
Captain Britain
are based on his confidence.
His confidence?
So if the more confident he is, the more powerful he is.
Uh-huh.
So he has like a girlfriend there at this place that he's cheating on, right? And she's completely aware of it, but allows it to happen because she understands that he has to be confident for him to be powerful.
Uh-huh.
But the chick that he's cheating on her with is a real turd. So quickly this kind of love triangle comes out, but... Captain Britain's girlfriend is also kind of attracting other people, other dudes from around the house, you know, and one of them, I forget his name, I can't remember his name, but he's a kid that used to be just this fat kid that played video games that has now been embodied by the spirit of a Celtic warrior, like this ancient Celtic warrior that
cool.
Obsesses people. Possesses people. So now he's like this ripped, you know, Celtic warrior that, you know, is very powerful, but he's still just a kid. Like, nothing about him mentally has changed, except he knows that all of a sudden he'll have these homicidal urges. He has to kill shit.
Sounds like QQ Lane or something like that.
So at some point, Captain Britain and this love triangle kind of comes to light, because the chick that he was cheating on her with, like this fish girl, she's kind of like a female Abe Sapien, gets fired down into like this ravine, and he doesn't go after her, even though he can fly, you know. So she realizes all this, she's like, why the fuck wouldn't he save me, you know?
Yeah.
But his girlfriend's kind of got him by the nuts, because his girlfriend proper is pretty goddamn smart, can't remember her name, unfortunately. And so she's kind of masterminding all this to happen, and eventually Kid Britain, and this girl comes back, finds Kid Britain, kind of confronts him, and eventually this girl, his girlfriend, has to confront them both and be like, look, I understand, you know, that you need to be confident to be powerful. It's the only reason I've allowed this to happen. You weren't fooling anyone, you know. Not like you're getting away with this. And, you know, now it's time that it comes to an end. And that's why this chick even got pushed off to begin with. She kind of set that up, too, by kind of planting seeds to cause other people to attack her.
Is she like a telepath?
No, she's just smart as shit. I forget what her power is. I'm almost certain she's not a telepath. She does something else. I can't remember. So Kid Britain then kind of loses his shit a little bit, because he's super cocky and he can't stand the idea that he's been outsmarted, even though he's not particularly smart. Mm-hmm. So he's like giving it to this chick and his girlfriend. They get into it, and this Celtic dude who apparently has a crush on her gets one of his homicidal urges, and off comes Kid Britain's head.
Whoa, dude! Whoa! Like, it is
done. So now there's an X through his picture.
It's like, where did the Celtic warrior guy get the axe or the?
He has an axe. I don't know if he can summon them or what, but he has like a battle axe and some other shit. So, I think, I don't know if they can, he can like manifest them. I think because I'm almost certain he's not carrying them around.
So he has uncontrollable homicidal urges from time to time because of this undead Celtic warrior that has possessed his body.
It seems to me that he has a few uncontrollable instances, and this is definitely one of them, because he couldn't help it. Because I think the Celtic warrior part of him always wanted to kill Kid Britain, but now the regular version of him also wanted to in that instance, so it just happened. You know, he couldn't control himself.
Yeah.
So that was completely kind of unpredicted. I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming, you know. His fucking head gone.
So who's the second person who died?
There was this chick, I forget her name, it's like Red Canary or Red Robin. She was like this chick with like red feathers and she could fly.
Cool.
And she tried to fly out of there and she hit an invisible barrier and broke her neck like an actual bird. Died. That was first
dude!
Day. First day.
Oh god, that sounds like that death scene from Cabin in the Woods. Remember that one?
I didn't see it.
Oh my, you gotta see that.
I know. But yeah, you can imagine. She tried to fly straight up and, you know,
broke her neck.
And it's funny, throughout the whole thing, they all have like like health bars. When they have, it'll show like a scene of them around like a campfire, and it'll have like X-23 and with like a health bar
all blurry in the green.
It's like they're like red blocks. There's like six red blocks, and everybody's just kind of deteriorating. And then there's this chick, what's her name? Not Hazard, it's something else. Hazmat or something. I think her name's Hazmat.
Well, this sounds exceedingly interesting, just from what you told me so far.
It's pretty cool. I mean, for me, it's really kind of fluffy, cheesecakey story stuff, because it's taken almost directly from there, but that's the hook I needed of Marvel characters, and certainly X-23 to get into all that shit, you know. It's very much teenage-oriented, you know, and probably made for teenagers, but I'm digging it pretty good. So that's the last thing I seen happen. So as of right now, there's a lot of teenagers on there. X-23 is alive and kicking. Of course, she's who I'm rooting for. I can't really imagine anyone else coming out of it. An interesting thing is that the first issue opens with Hazmat and X-23 fighting, and Hazmat in her monologue saying, you know, I can't win here. She's going to gut me, because her powers aren't enough to fuck X-23 up. I mean, it does fuck her up. It burns her flesh and burns her hair off and all this shit.
But it's not something that can slow X-23 down.
Can't stop her. So then it has that and starts off there, and then it kind of goes into the actual beginning of the story. So you know we're going to get back to that at some point. And right now, Hazmat X23 and someone else are like one part of one little group, and they're all kind of buddy buddies right now.
So before it begins, it like flashes to like the last two people on the island, Hazmat and X23.
And well, we don't know if that's the last two. We just know that fight happens at some point. This dude Metal.
Metal.
He looks like the Red Skull, but made of metal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hazmat's boyfriend.
Yeah,
he's dead.
How did he die? He's fucking made of metal.
Arcade makes an example out of him.
Why?
Arcade's like, this is getting boring. You guys need to start fighting each other. And he just kind of points at Metal, and he just explodes. He just turns into a red smear on the ground.
Oh, my God.
So Arcade's like, let's go. Let's
do it. Oh, my God.
He sacrifices himself.
Where are the Avengers when all this is happening? I mean,
unknown. This is taking place in Murder World. As far as I'm guessing the real world knows, is that these people are just gone missing. So who knows? I'm not sure. They don't go into it. So.
I would hope they'd be looking for them, because or maybe it could be like just this crazy like simulation sequence.
Well, because they don't flash back ever to the real world, it's starting to make me think this isn't going to that this isn't going to stay canon. It's going to get retconned somehow.
Yeah,
that's really what it seems like. It's very self-contained. It never makes reference really too much to the outside. It shows flashbacks of shit that happened before with them in the mansion and all that, but. I don't know. So far, they haven't showed anything of actually what's going on. Like, no one... You'd expect at some point during these comic books that somebody, Scott Summers or something like that, is going to become aware that Arcade's up to his old shit again, you know? But none of that has happened.
Well, yet. Scott Summers is, like, fucking Magneto Light now, so, of course, he's not going to be doing stuff
right,
like that.
Right, well, you know what I mean. Somebody is going to try to rescue these kids.
Yes, I would hope so. I would hope so. Or at least, like, some... At least it shows that some effort is being made to rescue these kids, but no, it's just... It's all on the island. It's all them either killing each other or being killed accidentally.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the next issue, and, seeing where it goes. So far, I've been enjoying the writing. It's by a dude named Hopeless. Man, maybe it's just me not reading a lot of current comics, but it feels a little more natural than some of the dialogue I've seen. Like, it kind of, you know, it totally seems like there's teenagers on this island interacting with each other.
And killing each other.
And occasionally killing each other. Yeah, or themselves. So, it's good. And if it at all sounds interesting, I would recommend checking it out. Mm. So then, I think that'll do it for us for tonight. Well, unless you have something else.
Oh, yeah. I've recently started a series called Age of Ultron. It's the next big...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the next big Marvel event.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, it's the next big Marvel event. I don't know how it's going to... affect the larger universe or whatever. There's been...
Marvel's kind of bad at that.
Yeah, there have been a few tie-ins. There have been a few tie-ins or whatever, like through Superior Spider-Man and something else or something like that. But it's just... It's sort of like it's just happening in, like, this self-contained Ultron world that has happened. Like, Ultron has, like, come back from wherever he was and has done what he's always, like... said he was going to do. Yeah, right. He's like, he has destroyed the world.
Right.
He has, like, it looks like he's encased most of it in, like, this metal shell or something like that or whatever. Every time they look up, they're, like, looking up, like, the underside of this, like, crazy-ass, like, metal thing.
It's like a dome.
Yeah, but it's not really like a dome. They can't really see past it, but it's just like this, it's like this canopy of just, like, machinery that's just above them constantly for some reason or another.
Okay.
And there's, like, automated Ultron robots that are flying all over the place, and they are looking for Avengers. They're looking for superheroes. I mean, it's obvious that most of the superheroes have already been killed. They, like, the rest of them are kind of like hiding out in the ruins of this S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, right. And they're like on the run from Ultron. And occasionally, and like the supervillains are working with Ultron. They're looking for these last remaining superheroes, and they're trading them to the Ultron robots in exchange for, like, you know, a few more days of life.
Right.
But eventually, Ultron is going to try and, you know, kill everybody. And so far, he's doing a pretty good job of it. I mean, he's already killed two fairly well-known superheroes, and he's hot on the trail of the rest as they're trying to, like, find a way to not only stop Ultron, but apparently erase him from the timeline altogether. Mm. And if you've read The Ultimates, like Brian Michael Bendis and Brian Hitch's The Ultimates, like from the Ultimate Universe, it's a lot like that.
Okay.
The writing is like exactly the same because it's Brian Michael Bendis, and the art is exactly the same because it's Brian Hitch, but it's really well done.
The first issue caught my eye because they did a embossed foil cover.
They did. A super 90s cover. The 90s cover.
My 90s boner popped up. And again, buy the balls and the chef. I had to buy it.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I'm not planning on reading the storyline, but I have to buy this comic book. It's in my nerd contract.
Did you read it?
No, not yet.
Well, it's pretty good. I would suggest you read it.
I'm sure it's good. I've got too much shit to do.
A lot of comic books.
Yeah, and
a lot of comic books, a lot of real life shit.
I haven't read close to half of my comics. It's shameful, but it's the reality of
it. Well, you're not like a huge reader anyway. I don't want to say that because
I understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you're right. There's no doubt about that. I read, but something has to be very interesting to me to stay engaged, to absorb it.
Okay.
If I'm not interested, I could read it and then not recollect anything that I just read. I have to be engaged to it pretty good. But yeah, that's, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, they're doing, Thanos Rising.
Oh my God. That was so good.
I want to get that. I need to pick that up. Yeah. Good stuff.
Oh, it's excellent. It's excellent stuff.
I'll be probably reading that one.
Contrary to popular belief, Thanos did not, like, you know, Thanos wasn't born Thanos.
Right.
I mean, there is this one thing that happens, like, the opening pages of, like, the comic book that makes you believe, like, you know, people are aware that he's going to become Thanos, and yet, you know, they allow him to do it anyways.
Right.
But it's just like, oh, God.
So is it possible, then, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Is that it's possible for me to be Thanos someday?
It
is great. So they got Thanos Rising, right?
Yeah.
They also got now this Ultron event.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that Ultron makes an appearance in the next Avengers movie.
Oh man, that'd be so good.
Because it seems
it would seem like a logical villain.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be the aren't they? They said they were going to introduce Ant-Man and the Wasp. So
I hope so.
So Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne.
They have to eventually, right? Like,
well, I mean,
how do you do Avengers without those characters?
Well, I mean, some people would say how could you do Avengers without Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver?
Yeah, I suppose that's true, but Scarlet Witch,
and there's, I know,
isn't immediately as
Avenger-y to you as, like,
she doesn't carry nearly as much consequence as Ant-Man does in relationship to the Avengers. But either way, I fucking bring her on too. I want all of them.
Oh yeah, they said there was going to be an Ant-Man movie directed by Edgar Wright.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that now.
Mm.
Ant-Man movie, yeah. And with Guardians of the Galaxy and
Zoe Saldana is going to put on green makeup. Shocker, shocker.
Mm.
Yeah, she's going to be Gamora, the most dangerous woman in the galaxy.
Mm. Well, that ought to be interesting.
I hope
it's good.
It seems
like such a fucking weird thing to make a movie out of.
I mean, Avatar was a fucking weird thing to make a movie out of. It made over $1 billion.
Yeah, I suppose. It's gotten better than Avatar.
Well, did you not like Avatar? I'm sure
I was disappointed by it.
I'm sure you loved it at the time. I'm sure you did.
When it I didn't see it.
Not really.
I didn't see it in theaters. I resisted the crazy Avatar rage that everyone was in. I remember, first and foremost, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I remember James Cameron coming out on Microsoft's E3 press conference to talk about Avatar for some fucking reason. The game, not even talking about the game. There was an Avatar game that came out and it was a huge turd, and he wasn't there talking about the game. He was talking about the movie and about how the technology is finally here to where he can bring his vision into, you know, to real life and all this. So then when I started to see previews and stuff, I was like, that doesn't look real to me. It looks good, but it doesn't look real. Like, that's some of the best CG. Could have been the best CG I've ever seen to that point, but
it still didn't look real.
So it didn't matter how good it looked. It didn't look real, right? So after that, the whole visual aspect of it, the story to me, I didn't really care for it. It was basically like Dances with Wolves, you know, where you
Dances with Wolves
or
Spaceship Edition,
right? Where you basically have like this council of people that are trying to decide what they're going to. I don't know. There's a lot of problems with that with Avatar, and it can be summed up very succinctly by a video on YouTube that is by what the fuck? I think of it. Honest Trailers has a, it's a YouTube channel, and they do all these movies, and Avatar's right on there. And they will go through rapid style, like basically my feelings on the whole movie. And I'll show it to you when we're done here. So no, I didn't really care for Avatar. I don't think it was a bad movie. It just nowhere near the expectation and all the hype and all the shit that went around it. It didn't seem to merit any of that for me. But beautiful movie, you know, all the stuff in it was really cool looking. It's just a little more fantasy than sci-fi for me. So, how did we start talking about Avatar?
Oh, we were talking about a movie. You were just like, you said you didn't think it was a great idea, but I said Avatar. I forget what movie we were talking about. We might have been talking about
the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. It's like you said it was a weird fucking concept for a movie, and I said so was Avatar, and you were just like, well, yeah, and then you went into your Avatar
diatribe. I do that. But no, I think it will be better than that.
Well, I'm reading the book right now. It's not bad. I mean, it's only two issues in, but it's still pretty good.
Avatar is like the idea of humans fucked up the planet. They are now terraforming other planets and
they're extracting valuable resources. They're basically making like an evil alien.
They're being huge douchebags.
Yes, they are.
That's the premise is plausible.
Yes,
but Guardians of the Galaxy completely implausible. And what? So it's
an alien like warlord can land on Earth, father a half human, half alien warlord, and have him, you know, go out and guard the Earth from extraterrestrial threats.
That's ridiculous to me. I hope Rocket Raccoon is in that movie.
Oh, he's in that movie.
Okay, well, enough said. That's my point. Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, he's in that movie, and somebody, and he's going to fly into a homicidal rage, and someone calls him a talking raccoon.
Right. Good. Good. All right, well, I think that will do it for
this week. I think that does it, yeah.
I think we did pretty well squeezing an episode out of the two of us. Probably more to be squozing. Squozing a word?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm going to back you up on that.
It's one of my favorite words,
squozing. Well, it's not really like, you know.
It's the past tense instance of squeezing something.
It's not like a, you know, accepted word, but I'm going to uphold your, you know, decision to make it a word.
Good. Good. Then we're in agreement.
Excellent.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tolerating us for another week. Right now, as far as the podcast goes, I've got one episode in the queue that's about to be published. I'll probably end up finishing that up tonight. And I'm going to try to get this one up relatively soon after that so that we're current. And then my plan is to record on Saturday, post on Sunday. And I'll do that as best I can. But right now I've only got Sunday off. It's my only day off, so...
Really? You only get one day a week off?
Yeah. So the editing the podcast takes a significant chunk, and I usually only have time for it at night.
Yeah.
And then I tend to nod off and fall asleep. So I'll do my best. But that's my goal, is to next day have everything posted. That way we don't have episodes just sitting around. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, listeners.
Tune in next week when we discuss
something. Editing what we're going to discuss later.
That's right. I won't know what it is then either. So,
well, as soon as we have,
I'll tell you what.
As soon as we have the episode,
not only will it be a surprise to us, it'll
be a surprise to the listeners as well. I love it. All right, I like that plan.
All right, take care of each other and try not to hurt people that you don't need to.
Please do indeed try that. Do that, because we are people that you don't know.
Yeah, I don't need to be hurt by anybody.
I don't. That's true.
Although I'd fuck somebody up that tried to hurt me.
Oh yeah.
You know what, listeners? Fucking bring it. Fuck you up.
Oh man. Yes. Come on. Bring it. God damn it.